From the Len DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of November, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan O'Brien. He's at Kansas State University Extension. He'll help us explore the biofuels industry just a bit. And we'll also talk through President-elect Trump's post to Truth Social last night as it's related to tariffs, Canada and Mexico in particular. And we'll bring into that conversation a webinar that Dan O'Brien hosted this morning with a couple of professors from North Dakota State University Extension. You're familiar with Rain Olson, of course, and then Dave Riplinger, who specializes in biofuels there. We'll listen to just a portion of that and then put it into context as it's related to the marketplace. And as we wrap up our time together today, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. It's going to turn chilly. Winter is arriving across the United States, says Don Day, at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and we'll do all of that on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand, anytime you'd like, at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Dan O'Brien from Kansas State University Extension is now here. He's an agricultural economist. Hi, Dan. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
I'm going to double you up today, use you both as the market analyst and our bioenergies analyst. That's the one we do once a month. Interestingly enough, let's start with the bioenergies because you, along with a couple of folks from North Dakota State University, we hear from Frayne Olson fairly often here, and I believe Dave Riplinger, also from NDSU, who focuses particularly on bioenergies, put together a webinar earlier today. It's about 35 minutes long. I suppose it can be found on the K-State Farm Manager website if folks want to go watch it. I was listening to it and found it of great interest. Can you talk me through the second half of that? I did pull a cut from it that I'll use just a bit later from Frayne and Dave as it's related to tariffs and some other things. But in the second part of it, you talk about the energy markets as of today. And can you walk me through some of the things that you're finding of interest?
Yeah, we had looked at kind of the implicit signal of what's happening at the ethanol plant level and found that corn prices in Kansas averaging about $4.45 per bushel. And in Illinois, about 432, and that's up from prices basically at $4. This would be what they're paying for corn at $4 or below, but 3 or 4 weeks ago. So more demand, even in the midst of having higher supplies, pretty strong demand coming out of corn inputs at the plants. And you do see ethanol production still going strong. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think that, well, here of late, we've had record high weekly corn production. I dropped off just a little bit from that and had been seeing in the midst of record high production of ethanol that stocks had been going down, have started to come up a little bit yet. So you wonder about economic forces and where all that's taking you. We did calculate through the profitability of ethanol plants using the Iowa State ethanol plant model through basically November the 22nd last week, and ended up and found that the higher corn prices have caused the break even numbers as an estimate anyway to drop to or below to drop slightly into negative areas after having been 10, 15, 20 cents per gallon over the last several months. Basically, break even cost estimated at $1.52 a gallon. Ethanol price at $1.47, so that's a 5 cent loss. But of course, in that you have some highly efficient plants that are doing great, and others that aren't. Just depending on their design when they were built and all of that. So you got that happening. I would say also in looking at biodiesel profitability or lack thereof, we have still showing pretty strong biodiesel profits. This isn't this isn't for necessarily renewable diesel, but for biodiesel, that, you know, what you take and mix with diesel on a percentage basis, showing a profit of about 26 cents a gallon. So a selling price, 409, and cost of production, 383. So gosh, there's your 26 cents. So overall, you're looking at a situation in the bioenergy markets where we've had some pretty good profitability, for both biodiesel and corn. We've seen some of that come off. Again, the increase in corn prices being paid at the plants have bit into, eroded the profitability of ethanol. And it's a question of where we're going forward. I think in this, as you and I have talked recently, and my North Dakota state friends have discussed, so much depends on the health of the U.S. economy, demand for gasoline, and the like. So if what's happening in the financial markets and optimism or lack thereof for where the U.S. economy will going and how that affects demand for gasoline will have a lot to do with where we go this winter in the coming next 2, 3, 4, 5 months in terms of the profitability of ethanol and how that industry goes forward on in terms of showing red ink or not.
Yeah, you mentioned that we've had some record-setting weeks, actually three in a row, the first 3 weeks of November, over 1.1 million gallons produced each of those 3 weeks. There's never been a set of 3 weeks, and I think only a couple of times where it's been 2 weeks back-to-back for records. And five of the highest production weeks have been made since July, and this is since 2010. It has been just a really incredible grind for ethanol since this last half of 2024. I'm wondering how quickly you think that grind might fall off, if that's what we're facing.
Well, overall, the corn market has, of course, it bottomed out in late September when we decided on it that hey, we're not worried about supplies. We've got enough supplies, and that's when those really low purchase prices at the plants came in, and I think the profitability of ethanol it's an operating on the margin operation again, stronger than expected. Fuel demand helping the selling price at least until recently, and then low prices have really supported us. So in terms of how we got to where we're at, gosh, you can do a lot if your main input corn is again not really highly priced. It was sort of a buyer's market. So we'll see. And we as we talked about general feed grain, wheat, oilseed markets, we haven't had that outside threat, i.e. a Brazilian drought come in and change the overall perspective on the grain markets yet. Market participants aren't really worried yet about anything coming there. So we've gone pretty much sideways. And as we speak, we're looking at these corn. It's not below $4, but it's not above $4.30 either. It's about hanging around $4.15, $4.24, something like that. I think at $4.19 as I look at it right now. And not a lot going on there. And on the if anything has been surprised, it's been when you look at soybean meal, soybean oil prices have been strong. And in fact, we try to follow exports of late. There was a tremendous week of soybean oil exports here in the U.S. about a week or so ago. So you've got some things happening in that market that's supportive of the co-products, but showing, I guess, not really feeding back in a really strong manner to soybeans itself. So again, as we talk, looking at January, about below $10. It's about hanging around 980, something like that, 975, 985, thereabouts. So not a great time in terms of soybean prices, but some things happening internationally on the oilseed side.
On that note, I'd like to turn you back to the webinar you and Frain and Dave Ripplinger did earlier today. I pulled a soundbite from it. This is about 4 minutes long. You had asked them what they were thinking as it was related to policy in the Trump administration. And Frain picked up at this point off of not a tweet, but a post from Truth Social that President-elect Trump had made last night. In it, he says, on January 20th, as one of my many first executive orders, I will sign all necessary documents to charge Mexico and Canada a 25% tariff on all products coming into the United States. Here's how Frain Olson from NDSU reacted.
Just as a reminder, Mexico is our number one corn buyer, our number one wheat buyer, and our number two soybean buyer. So trade with Mexico, as well as trade with Canada, have, in my opinion, equally potential impacts on grain prices. But as we think about what that does to renewable fuels, as a farm manager, I'm obviously concerned about prices falling. But if I'm in the industry, I'm manufacturing or producing these, that's one of my major input costs. And so when we think about soybean prices dropping and what that does for soybean crush margins and the availability of new or virgin soybean oil, when we think about fewer exports and lower corn prices, what does that do to the profitability for ethanol? So there are these ripple effects that start going through our economy. My point in bringing this up is, as farm managers, we think about what happens to soybean prices and corn prices and wheat prices, but we also have to realize those ripple through the economy and ripple through the rest of the supply chain, starting to impact and touch a lot of these processing sectors as well.
Dave, comments on that?
Yeah, I do. There's thinking about retaliation and possible implications. So right now, ethanol use in the United States is relatively flat. And the great news has been the development of export markets. And Canada's long been, except for a few exceptions here and there, been our number one destination for ethanol exports. And we've also seen a tremendous increase in ethanol exports to Mexico in the last few years. Mm-hmm. If these tariffs come into being and there's retaliation, ethanol ends up might end up having a pretty good target on it. And again, that has been an outlet. And again, too, if we think about exports, we can think about the crop itself or the products that we might have, and it all impacts demand. And so something to keep in mind. And I guess, like many things, we'll see what happens over the next few months.
So coming out of that, Dave Ripplinger looks towards the export market for ethanol. And as you and I had discussed, ethanol so far in the last half of this year has had really big production numbers. Dave also says that ethanol in usage consumption in the United States is flat. That's because it's sort of capped at that 15 million gallon
RFS
level thereabouts. Yep. Through the RFS. So that must be entering the export market. How concerned should farmers be as it's related to ethanol and corn usage for the export market? Is it in trouble?
Well, I think you'll have to see these policies play out. I don't doubt that. We also talked about in that session about a lot of signaling going on right now of actions that may happen, and because of that, people reacting to signals, seeking to people, different players, different countries, responding to statements made of what could be coming in the future. So should farmers be concerned? I think I would wait to see what comes out of the confirmation hearings. Again, we talked about the nominee for the EPA, which is very much involved in RFS and all the bioenergy info coming in. I don't doubt that it's not insignificant that now the new chair of the Senate, Senator Thune, comes from the Dakotas, has been a strong bioenergy supporter. And so I don't doubt that that there'll be some very serious discussions. There'll be very public discussions, and that somewhere in all of that, there'll have to be a middle ground to be had. So I guess I am thinking that it's something to be wary of, but these decisions don't happen in a vacuum, and there will be a lot of discussions and a lot of choices that'll have to be made, especially given what we just talked about, that'll have to be somewhat of a middle ground. So I wouldn't panic yet. I would watch and see how it all plays out. I do think if I could add one thing in, kind of a side note that Riplinger pointed out has to do with what's happening in California in terms of their regulatory agencies, their capping of the use of certain crops or oils from certain crops to meet their biomass related diesel volumes. And in that, again, you've had this open door for cooking oil from China to come into the U.S. I also note that just days after the election, just soon, it might have been the next day, the Chinese government, at least it was reported that they had changed some export tax incentives that had been in place. That would work to provide less incentive for cooking oil to come out of the country of their country towards the U.S. So a lot of factors in play. I think that cooking oil, as it affects the biodiesel industry, is a big deal. I guess I'm kind of stumbling around to say that right now we're aware of these things. We have to see how things play out. Without doubt, you're looking at renewed attention to what's thought to be fair trade or not, and we'll have to see how in the broader picture it works out for the case of bioenergy on the one hand and agriculture beyond that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Todd, thank you very much. I appreciate speaking with you.
Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State University Extension. If you'd like to watch that webinar they recorded this morning, it should be up on the Ag Manager website from Kansas State. Search out Ag Manager. It's at agmanager.info. You know, today I want to start to tell you a bit more about the Farm Assets Conference that's coming up on the 13th of December on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the U of I at the Aya Hotel. Should be a great day. We're going to talk about some practical advice as it's related to conservation management on the farm. Gary Schnitke is going to head that up. We'll have Emily Heaton and Giovanni Frezafontes with us for that particular conversation as well. We'll take a look at commercial lenders and agriculture, talk a little bit about mental health, alternative federal crop insurance products with Brittany Goodrich from the U of I and Ag Economist. That's something I know you're going to want to pay attention to. Eric Snodgrass will be there from Conduit Ag, and Brad Zwilling from FBFM. Nick Paulson will talk about managing their farm input costs. Jonathan Kappas, policy issues. Joanna Colusi will take up South America as usual. The crop scientists will be on board, including Boris Camaletti, Aaron Hager, John Jones, Nick Sider, and Emerson Napsiger. And we'll wrap it all up with a discussion of the marketplace between Joe Jansen from the U of I, Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Colin Waters of the Illinois Corn Growers Association. I hope to see you at the Farm Assets Conference, but you need to register. Do it right now today online at willag.org. That's willag.org. The United States Department of Agriculture released its last weekly crop progress report yesterday afternoon. The first report for the 2025 season, by the way, will be released on Monday, April the 7th. There are no numbers for corn or soybeans as harvest has been completed. However, for winter wheat, 97% of the crop has been sown. 89% of the crop has emerged. Both of those are on pace. The condition of the crop is 47% good this week and 8% excellent. Here are the final figures from a few of the Midwest states.
This is Melissa Couch, agricultural statistician for the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office. Rain along with snow showers in the northeast and north central parts of the state allowed Iowa's farmers an average of 4.3 days suitable for field work during the week ending November 24. Field activities slowed down this week with reports of fall tillage and fertilizer and manure applications wrapping up. Subsoil moisture condition rated 14% very short, 41% short, 44% adequate, and 1% surplus. Corn harvested for grain is virtually complete. For the USDA NAS Iowa Field Office, this is Melissa Couch.
This is Mark Schleusener, state statistician for Illinois with the USDA's National Ag Statistics Service. Temperatures were above normal in Illinois last week, and rainfall was mixed across the state. Rainfall averaged 0.61 inches across Illinois, and that was just 5/100ths of an inch below average for this time of year. Northern areas were generally wetter than average, but southern parts of Illinois were drier than normal. Temperatures averaged 45.8 degrees, and that was 5.6 degrees above normal. There was an average of 4.6 days suitable for field work last week in Illinois, and topsoil moisture was rated 4% very short, 14 short, 71 adequate, and 11% surplus. 93% of Illinois winter wheat acres had emerged as of Sunday. That is 1 point ahead of 1 year ago and 4 points ahead of the 5-year average for the state. The condition of the Illinois wheat crop improved slightly from last week. 1% of acres were rated very poor, 2% were poor, 17% were rated fair, 77% were in good condition, and 3% of Illinois wheat acres were rated excellent. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Ag Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Nathaniel Wernske, Indiana State Statistician for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Winter preparations commenced as harvest season for many farmers throughout the state came to a close. Topsoil moisture levels increased from the previous week with 61% rated adequate or surplus. There are 3.5 days suitable for field work for the week ending November 24. The state received a mix of rain and snow during the previous week. Winter wheat emergence remained approximately on schedule, while the crop's condition was stable at 64% of the crop rated good to excellent condition. Other activities included hauling grain and equipment maintenance. This is Nathaniel Wernske, Indiana State Statistician for USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service.
And this final note from Minnesota, where last week widespread rain and snow limited farmers to just 4 days suitable for field work. Field activities there included finishing up harvest and fall tillage and planting CRP and cover crops. Livestock were said to be doing well with no issues reported. The subsoil moisture levels in Minnesota now rated 13% very short, 40% short, 46% adequate, and 1% surplus. There was a special note from the United States Department of Agriculture relating to the USDA data that's being collected in its December survey. During the first 2 weeks of December, NAS will survey about 70,000 U.S. producers. It's one of USDA's largest survey efforts. The responses will provide the final information for the 2024 U.S. row crops, focusing on harvested acreage, production, and storage. In addition, hog producers will be asked about their current inventory, pig crop, and farrowing intentions for the next 6 months. The results will be available beginning with Hogs and Pigs Report, December the 23rd, followed by the Annual Crop Production Summary and the other reports on January the 10th. Farmers should watch for their survey and be sure to respond. Your information, of course, USDA says, matters, and it's confidential. Let's check in on the weather forecast for the nation and the planet and the growing regions with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don. How are things out in your area? Tell me you've got big sky country and it's beautiful and gorgeous and blue.
Well, it's getting blue in some people's skin color because it's getting pretty darn cold. Blue, also the blue ski runs are getting snowed on. So there's quite a bit of weather and moving into the west, and we've seen some big stormy patterns along the west coast and the Pacific Northwest over the last couple of weeks. And some of that's now finally moving east, and it's kind of instigating kind of a hemispheric-wide change in the weather, at least on this side of the globe. We're going to really see the first real shot of what I'd say is winter coming into the lower 48.
And I saw some teens in the overnight lows in the future here. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so what's going to happen is we're going to see a system come out of the Rockies as we get just before Thanksgiving and then through Thanksgiving weekend. This is going to carve out a large trough of low pressure. Basically, the jet stream is going to take a big dip out of Alberta and Saskatchewan and just carve itself out, go all the way down to near the Gulf Coast before curving back up again into New England. And that's going to just leave the door open to some very cold air to come out of Canada. So we're going to see temperatures maybe as cold as sub-zero here by the weekend in North Dakota in particular. And you mentioned the teens. We're going to see some overnight lows in the teens across the Midwest and Corn Belt by the weekend and early next week. And that trough, that jet stream taking a dip, is going to want to be dipping for several days. And so we're going to see not a lot of snow in the Midwest, some, but a lot of cold. Where they're going to get a lot of snow is in the Great Lakes region. The lake effect snows are going to really kick into gear.
So is this something that will hang around? Is this the transition to winter?
This is. We're likely going to see the nation's midsection see below average temperatures probably for 10 to 14 days. Now, usually after you get a period like that, you do get a little bit of a warm-up. You'll see a little bit of a transition, but it's going to maybe not be until that, going into that third week of October. I mean, so get my months mixed up, December, before that begins to happen. So the really warm fall that a lot of the U.S. has had, that's over. We're no longer talking about a fall pattern, but a winter one.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thanksgiving week. A quick reminder that the markets are closed on Thursday for Thanksgiving Day. They'll reopen at 8:30 on Friday, but close early at 12:05 on that same day. And don't forget that you can visit our website today to get yourself registered for the Farm Assets Conference or the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. The address there is willag.org. That's willag.org. You have a great Tuesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.